ask you this. Let me ask you this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Sports Central.
Chicago Sports Conversation with Adam Hogue.
Go, go, go.
This is Sports Central. On demand and streaming live on WGNRadio.com.
This is Sports Central from the studios at WGN Radio. Streaming for you, for your heart's content. We have 60 minutes of rock'em sock'em good fun planned for you. As Wendy and Bill bid us adieu, you can catch them tomorrow at 10 on 720. Hi, I'm Harry Tynowitz. The role of Adam Hogue, role normally played by Adam Hogue, will be played by Harry today. Yes, that's true. I'm Harry Tynowitz, and you guys know me from my work on the Brady Bunch, and As the World Turns, and all the James Bond movies. And you can hear me and Carm every Saturday doing White Sox Weekly, which is a weekly show about the White Sox. We will talk a lot about the Cubs, the Sox, and tonight's big game. Unfortunately, Loyola will not be there, but the NCAA basketball championship game is tonight. It's in San Antonio, Texas, and it'll be the Michigan Wolverines and John Beilein going up against Jay Wright's Villanova Wildcats, and the game will feature two Chicago area studs going head to head in the championship contest. And it'd be great, man. When I was a kid, these guys used to play for the University of Illinois. Now they go away to school, but what are you going to do about it? But I'm looking forward to it as Matthews and Brunson will go up against each other. Matthews played for he played for St. Rita. That's Charles Matthews. And Jalen Brunson played for Stevenson. And Jalen Brunson's the star of Villanova. And Charles Matthews is one of the stars for Michigan Wolverines. So there's a big Chicago flavor tonight for the game, which will get underway a little bit after 8 o'clock tonight. If you're in the military, it's a little after 2000 that the game will start. Also, we're going to talk baseball. Sahadev Sharma with The Athletic will join us in about 20 minutes to talk about the way that the season started on the north side. It certainly started beautifully on the south side with the White Sox going into Kansas City, taking advantage of a horrible injury to their best player, Sal Perez. He hurt himself. Carrying his luggage from the airport. He went up the stairs and he hurt himself. He's out 4 weeks. So the White Sox dominated after James Shields gave up 4 runs in the first inning opening day. They came back and they scored 14 consecutive runs, 6 homers. Matt Davidson had 3 of them. And Tim Anderson, 2. Jose Abreu hit 1. And the Sox won that game 14-7, a football score. The Bears beat the Chiefs. And then Saturday, they were trailing. They were down 3-1. But guess what? Good teams don't stop there. They came back, and Yoan Moncada had a big hit there. And Wellington Castillo swinging, hit the green light on a 3-0 pitch. After you look at that game, you say, hey, you know, this could be a fun season. I think White Sox fans are aware they're not going to go to the playoffs this year, probably. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that. But the White Sox, certainly a lot of fun. And after 3 games north of the border, tonight, tomorrow, and Wednesday, they're all 6:07 starts. They're all right here. Andy Major's got the pregame, and then Ed Farmer and Darren Jackson have the actual game itself. Then Thursday is the home opener, and the whole station will be out to make the White Sox feel welcome on WGN Radio 720. So tonight is the NCAA College Basketball Championship game, and for me, that means gambling. And, we don't advocate gambling here at WGN, but what the hell country are you from? So I remember back when I was, a little kid and, made my first bet and my first play. There are certain games that stick out. There are certain games that stand out. There are other games that just, you think of them and you say, well, I didn't really win that game. I didn't lose that game. So I don't really recall what happened. But, let's go back and listen to 1981, and I'll tell you a little story here. I think you might recognize the name of the freshman guard who found himself open in the corner of the floor with the Tar Heels, his team, trailing the Hoyas late in the contest.
Gordy to Black. The time, 18.
Shot, Jordan! Michael Jordan, 14 seconds.
Look for Sleepy Floyd.
Oh, he threw it to the wrong man. He threw it to Worthy.
It's over. It's over.
He threw it to the wrong man. So first, Michael Jordan, just awesome. Michael Jordan takes the shot, and he makes it from the corner. And, you know, Georgetown didn't know what hit him. It was the demise of the Hoyas. The Hoyas were up, and Dean Smith's team, which only lost two games that year, were not used to trailing anybody. But and this is the 81-82 season, so it's the 82 championship, or as we like to think of it. And it's hard to believe it was that long ago. 32 years ago tonight, Michael Jordan in the corner hits the J. And the Hoyas now find themselves trailing. So Carolina's up by one because Michael made the shot. They're up 63-62. And Eric Sleepy Floyd, who wore 21 for Georgetown, he's inbounding the ball. And they've got seconds left to get a shot. And my problem is I've got the North Carolina Tar Heels minus 1.5. So how are the Tar Heels going to cover the 1.5? I need like a... you know, like an offensive foul called on Georgetown, and then Carolina gets the ball, and they get fouled before they inbound the ball. How am I going to get a turnover and a foul shot here? Well, the impossible happens. James Worthy, who went on and had an amazing career with the Lakers. James Worthy, wearing 52 back then. Of course, he was 42 in the pros. But James Worthy just simply claps his hands and steps out like behind, going away from the basket, goes behind the passer, Sleepy Floyd, and he goes, "Here." And Sleepy Floyd, unexplainably, inbounds the ball to the guy on the other team. He passes it in to James Worthy, who then gets fouled. And nobody could believe what happened. It wasn't like they went for a shot and the guy got a rebound and got fouled. He just inbounded the ball to Worthy, and Worthy got fouled. He had two free throws. They're laying 1.5. If he makes either one of them, they cover, and James Worthy bricked both. He bricked both, I tell you. I don't know how the hell that happened, but that happened. And, you know, when you think about championship games, you can think about it the way you want to think about it. There are great memories. For me, I'll always remember, like, what side I was on. I'll always remember the gambling aspects of it. Okay, on to the next one. The next one was a better feel. The next one is the Jim Valvano game and Phi Slamma Jamma. The Houston Cougars were the team to beat that year. They would get like 28 slam dunks in every game. And that was the team that had Akeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler. They were terrific. Jim Valvano's North Carolina State Wolfpack, a lot of people didn't think they should be in the tournament in 83. They lost 10 games, but they found themselves in the tournament. I'll never forget the first game. They were trailing Pepperdine. The Pepperdine Waves, by the way, wonderful campus. If you're ever in L.A., if you're a high school senior and you're going somewhere because it's going to lead to a great education, I advocate you do that. But otherwise, you should check out Pepperdine, man. It's on the beach. It's really cool. Dennis Johnson played there. So NC State's losing to Pepperdine the first game. They have a miracle finish. They come back and win. And it's kind of like the Sister Jean thing. People are like, oh, yeah, NC State had their day in the sun. We'll see what happens from this point on, but you probably won't have to worry about NC State. So this game. Houston, like I said, they were slamming the ball home the entire season long. All they did was like take, you know, shots from 3 inches away. They had the highest field goal percentage in years because all their shots were slam dunks. So Houston, in this game against North Carolina State, they slammed their first basket of the night, and that was the only slam they would have. And they're up 7. Late in the contest, under 2 minutes, they're up 7, and Valvano starts fouling. And Houston starts breaking the front ends of the one-on-ones. And this is like the most exciting game. And, you know, obviously, you know, we lost Jimmy V years later, and he remains great inspiration to so many people. But what he did that night was inspired coaches. He inspired underdogs. He inspired players that were told, you have no shot to win this game. Kind of like Michigan's being told tonight. Kind of like John Beilein's being told tonight. This is the biggest favorite. Villanova's the biggest favorite since 2010. And NC State was down late in the game. They get the ball back. They're passing it around. They're way behind the 3-point line. They don't, you know, they're way like away from the basket. And they throw up a prayer. And let's go back and listen to 1983.
It's down to 7 seconds.
You can see the time. Wittenberg. Oh, it's a long way.
And so the State Wolfpack had Derek Wittenberg, 25, Sidney Lowe, 35, and their guards were keeping them in the game. They also had a forward who would play in the NBA for a long time with the Utah Jazz, Thurl Bailey. But it was another guy. It was Lorenzo Charles, who wore 43. Lorenzo Charles went up this, like, prayer of a three-quarter shot. I'd say it's about a third of the way. Halfway, you know, it's like, I don't know, 15 feet, 12 feet towards the basket from the half court line. This prayer of a shot is an air ball. And Lorenzo Charles goes up and jams it down with the second left, and the time runs off the clock. And NC State has a miracle victory. The Wolfpack and Jim Valvano, they win that game 54-52. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Jimmy V just starts running around the court looking for somebody to hug. He said, I was just looking for somebody to hug. We move 5 years ahead. Bobby Knight against Jim Boeheim. They're in the Superdome. Syracuse, the Orangemen, Derek Coleman. They've got the lead on Indiana, okay? Steve Alford, you guys might have heard of him. Steve Alford, now coaching at UCLA. He's 7-for-7 in this game, all threes. 7-for-7 for three-pointers. Boy, and, you know, the hard part was he wasn't even playing against the Bill Self defense. Here's an idea, Bill Self. Change your defense. If the other team is making 107 three-pointers, maybe change your defense. No, I want to just keep it the way it is because they're bound to start missing. Okay, good call, Bill Self. So Alford's 7-for-7 on three-pointers. The whole world is expecting Steve Alford to get the ball, and there's seconds left. The Orange are up by one, but here come the Hoosiers.
Smart takes the shot, and the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead. Nobody stopped the clock.
Nobody stopped the clock, and Keith Smart, not Steve Alford, Keith Smart is the guy that knocked down the game winner, and Indiana had the victory. Indiana won that game 74-73. So many of these games are blowouts, like the, you know, Tark the Shark, his UNLV team of 1990 that featured Grandmama and Plastic Man, two great nicknames. I mean, right there, that's the key to a championship team, don't you think, Ben, is having two great nicknames. So Larry Johnson, Grandmama, and Stacey Augman, Plastic Man, they blew out Duke. They beat him 103-73. There are so many of these games. The Kentucky's had blowouts in this game. Utah, Rick Majerus, that was a bad night for me when I decided to take the Utah Utes. But I had Utah the year that they lost by like 30 points. It felt like 30. They end up losing by 9, but trust me, it was never that close in the game. This was a game that was pretty fun. This is the Butler Bulldogs, who nobody thought would be in the Final Four, going up against the monstrosity known as the Duke Blue Devils. This is the team that featured John Shire, you know, Glencoe's own John Shire. And it's 2010. Gordon Hayward's got the basketball, and here he comes across the timeline with one chance to take it all. I mean, this is the Jack and the Giant. This is the crazy, how could this ever happen that Butler could beat Duke? But here it is. Here's Gordon Hayward getting the ball and throwing up the shot for all the marbles.
It's Hayward pulling it down, getting around Zubac at midcourt, launches the shot. Oh, it almost went in! Almost went in, and Duke is the king of the dance, 2010.
Okay, so look, so Butler technically lost that game, but I will always think of that game as Butler winning because they covered the point spread. See, and I think that's what happens a lot is you have like memories, and you're like, Butler, they won a national championship. No, what are you talking about? They never won a national championship. Yeah, Gordon Hayward took the shot from half court. Yeah, it didn't go in. Yeah, but they covered. They covered. They won. They won the national championship. That's all you got to remember about it is that's the game. So here we have tonight, Villanova, Jay Wright, who's the best dressed coach in all of college basketball, going up against John Beilein, a guy who was at West Virginia forever. And John Beilein came north. He came to the University of Michigan after Tommy Amaker had imploded the program. Tommy Amaker now doing a really nice job over with Harvard. And he was a Coach K guy, obviously. He played guard for Coach K's Blue Devils. So you got John Beilein and the Michigan Wolverines, who did a very, you know, they had a great season. They did a very, very solid job in the tournament. They won the Big Ten tournament. And now I wonder if people will say, well, they had an advantage because they got an extra week off. Because we know that the Big Ten wanted to play in Madison Square Garden this year, so that's where they held their tournament. And the only way they could get it, because the Big East is locked in there for a million years, is to play their tournament a week before everybody else did. So like while UIC and the Horizon League were playing their tournament, and that's usually reserved, and no shot against UIC, because I'm a big believer in schools like UIC and Loyola. But the Big Ten would normally play the week right before the tournament would start. They would normally have their championship game on that final Sunday, you know, when the SEC played their championship game. But they didn't. They played a week earlier, and Michigan was solid, and Michigan won that tournament. And, you know, they're looking real good. The Michigan Wolverines are looking real good. But Villanova is who everybody's taking. I mean, all the experts are taking Villanova, and our own expert, Kevin Powell, KP, was at the Final Four. He's going to join us live in the studio in about 20 minutes. For some reason, our clock is racing backwards now. It's like a Twilight Zone. I don't know how this happened, but the clock is going back. Oh, I wonder if I could get younger and I could not drive home that night from the Blackhawks game. Oh, now it stopped. So KP will be with us in about 23 minutes. But it's like a foregone conclusion to a lot of people that Villanova is going to win this game. I mean, they've got a terrific team. Jalen Brunson is the player of the year. They've got their other guard, Bridges, is, you know, a fantastic player. Everybody on their team averages double digits. And then you got Muhammad Ali Abdurrahman, who's a terrific player who had a horrible game against Loyola. They didn't make any three-pointers. I mean, really, looking back at it for Loyola, Michigan never turns the ball over. They're second in the country for the turning the ball over. They have the second fewest turnovers of any team in the country, and they kept turning the ball over time and time again in the first half. Michigan is awesome from the three-point land, and they could not make any three-pointers on Saturday night. And then Michigan, you know, rarely gets into foul trouble. And they were picking up a lot of fouls. I really thought that this game that was played Saturday, Loyola, and they were up about 12, but I thought that Loyola should have been up about 18 in the second half of that game. You know, if somebody had said, hey, would you settle for Loyola being up 7 at half? Of course, just take that. Of course I would take that. They're an 11 seed going up against Michigan, a 3 seed. Of course I would take that. But the way that Michigan played, Loyola should have been up by like 18 points going into that second half. And really, it was like one injury and then like one like 5-6 minute period where they kept turning the ball over. They turned it over on 5 straight possessions, and that is not good. So we are about 7 hours from game time, which means we're about 9 hours and 20 minutes away from the song. The song that, you know, that they go out with every year. And I thought after the first Loyola game when they beat Miami, I thought that we'd have one moment of Loyola in the song. I thought we would have Sister Jean, you know, for a brief second, and we would see Dante's 3 going in, which should have been a 4. But you're going to see a lot of Loyola tonight when they play One Shining Moment. We're going to step away for just a second. In for Adam Hoag, I'm Harry, and we are on Sports Central. How cool is that? Streaming to you, WGNRadio.com. Sahadev Sharma from The Athletic. We're going to talk a little Cubs, little White Sox, Major League Baseball, and then Kevin Powell will be in the studio with us late to go over his thoughts of being down in San Antonio. We'll go out here. We'll be right back in 2.5 minutes, but let's hear a little of the song. Wet their appetites for tonight, Ben.
The ball is tipped, and there you are. You're running for your life. You're a shooting star, and all the years
No one knows.
WGN. WGN.
This is where WGN Sports Central lives.
It's alive!
Streaming right now with your host, Adam Hogue.
Today, the role normally played by Adam Hogue is being played by Harry Tino. It's sort of half as good as Adam Hogue. This is Sports Central with you every day from 1 to 2. Usually you find Adam Hogue sitting in the chair, but today it's me, which means I get to bring on one of the coolest baseball guys there is. He knows everything. He can tell you what Tommy La Stella had for breakfast this morning. From The Athletic, it is Sahadev Sharma. Sahadev, what did Mr. La Stella enjoy for breakfast this morning?
I believe it was some grits and some eggs and sausage. That's what I believe I saw.
That is unbelievable. That is a great info, inside info. So for the Cubs, they're playing the Marlins. These are not, you know, last year's Marlins. There's no Giancarlo Stanton. There's no Yelich. There's no Ozuna. You know, you kind of thought, hey, how great would it be for the Cubs to go in and get a four-game sweep in Miami? But boy, they, not for lack of effort by the bullpen, but the Cubs come home 2-0. So if I asked you, what did you learn from opening weekend, how would you respond?
Yeah, that it's not, nothing comes easy in this game, and that you better be up and prepared for whoever the opponent is, because they're all big leaguers. I got to say, I was a little surprised by the Marlins. They did not go down easily. These guys are big leaguers. We all know that. But the Cubs are supposed to be the better team, clearly. They're a World Series contender. The Marlins are going to be competing for the number one pick. So to come back 2-2 was a little surprising, yes. But it's also one series. It's also the beginning of the year. You can list off the excuses, if you want to call them that. But it takes a little energy to get up for certain teams. And I do wonder how hard it is to open a season in a ballpark that's pretty much empty against a bunch of players you don't really know. So that shouldn't be the case. You'd prefer that they're constantly highly motivated and ready to go, and that there's no, they constantly have that edge that you need to take on whatever opponent, whoever the opponent is. I'm not sure if it was a lack of motivation, but there was definitely something missing, and I was surprised at how hard the Marlins are to strike out. Those guys were putting everything in play. Every single time they got two strikes on them, they were fouling it off, fighting off pitches. And they were really pushing those pitch counts up, and that was part of the issue with why they had to go to the bullpen so early. And of course, you add in a 17-inning game, and that doesn't help. So the Cubs are, I expect the Cubs to be much better. Joe was pretty adamant again today that he liked the way the offense looked yesterday. And I know Joe's accused of spinning things positively, but go watch those first 5-6 innings. Maybe the latter innings they didn't perform as well as they should have, but early on they were crushing the ball. Even that there were a lot was falling, not enough where it was when there were men on base, but there were some line drives hit right at guys, and Lewis Brinson, I mean, that guy covers so much ground in center field.
He's going to be good, and that's the guy. That was the key piece they got back in the trade with the Milwaukee Brewers. He's at the Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati, a stadium I was a little underwhelmed by my visit there. Sahadev Sharma writes for The Athletic. He covers the Cubs, knows all things baseball. So I would say that there were two, even though Quintana did not, you know, finish the game strong, he was like grooving. I'm more worried about Yu Darvish. Lester, I don't think we need to worry about him. He'll throw the occasional, you know, off game, but what do we make off of Yu Darvish not doing so strongly in his Cub debut?
You know, this is a guy that does occasionally have trouble with his fastball command. As long as he's healthy, I would have zero concern with him. I think he's going to get in a groove. I think he's going to have a few dominant months at minimum. I think this guy's going to have a really strong season. I think the fastball command was just not there. The slider, there'd be some sliders he broke off and say, yep, that looked like the guy in spring training that, you know, nobody could hit. And then there would be times when he couldn't find the zone with the slider. He couldn't put it anywhere where he wanted it to. So it was a mixed bag, that his first start. Definitely disappointing when you come off a big spring and you come off a big signing a big contract. I honestly, I kind of disagree. I'm a little concerned with Lester just because of the velocity. If the velocity was down last year and he struggled, it's down two ticks again this year. If that's going to be consistent, that's a big issue. I also know that, and I agree with you, the second part of what you said about Lester is that he's done it before. He's had these stinker starts before, and he always bounces back. Almost always does he come back. Even last year, he was solid in the playoffs. You know, it's not as if this guy doesn't know how to work with Lester stuff. So I just want to see a little bit more velocity, and then I'll be comfortable with Lester, because I know that there's nobody that's tougher on the mound. There's nobody that's going to go out there and give it his all more than Lester. That guy will go out there and work his butt off for you and give everything that he has with what he has.
Okay, I'm with you. I remember, like, they had that Pirates had that 10-run first last year, and that was, you know, Lester looking awful. Then he came back, and he was good after that. You mentioned how the Marlins were hard to strike out. That really wasn't the case with the Cub hitters, was it?
No, you know, there were some issues, especially in the first game, the first three games. You know, they were averaging about 10 strikeouts a game. Not awful, not good. It's something that needs to be corrected. I believe they struck out five times yesterday. Two were by Quintana, and you know that looked better. Yesterday looked better. I will say maybe, like I said, the results weren't there. You scored zero runs against a pitcher whose first name I've already forgotten.
Peters.
Not a good thing. that's not acceptable. But I liked the way the offense looked. That's how you want it to look more often than not, and good things will happen. So if they can continue on that and then you know, come up with the clutch hits, I think that's the bigger thing. Rizzo popped up with a man on third, less than two outs, and then all of his other three at bats were much better. Who was it? Javi laid down a bunt with a man on third, less than two outs, and that can't happen. With the pitcher coming up next, these are things that just can't happen. And they have to be better at getting runners in from third, less than two outs, situational hitting. These are things that we talk about all offseason, not just you and me, Harry, but the everybody in the front office, all the coaches, Joe Madden. These guys know what they need to do. They know their flaws, and they need to correct them. They brought in Chili Davis specifically for this issue. I think... You know, it's four games, so you don't want to go crazy over it, but it's been an issue in the past. They were the worst in 2015 at getting runners in from third, less than two outs. Pretty bad last year again. They were okay, middle of the pack in 2016, and we all know what happened that year. That's good enough. If you're middle of the pack, that's fine, especially if you have the big boppers and everything doing their job. So just be average. Don't be terrible. That's all I'm asking in that department.
Right. It's not a lot to ask. Will there ever be, you know, I like Ian Happ a lot. I don't know why he didn't play more in the playoffs last season, and I also love Alberto Amora. Alberto Amora Jr. from the Miami area. Is there ever a scenario, do you see in this season, where Hayward will just become like the fourth outfielder, get used in, you know, put Zobrist in there, you know, maybe Hayward's the fifth outfielder? Do you ever see a scenario where Hayward is not constantly going to be starting two out of every three games, and maybe they just bring him in late in games as a defensive replacement, or will he always be in that lineup like two out of every three games?
Yeah, no, I think there's definitely a scenario where that happens. I'll tell you this, though, if he keeps playing like he did that first series, it's not going to happen, because he was one of, you know, I mean, who were the guys that looked good this series? It was Bryant, it was Russell, and it was Schwarber, right? Those guys looked great offensively. I'd put Hayward right behind them, as far probably ahead of everyone else. If I'm remembering correctly, he's ahead of guys. He looked better than Rizzo at the plate. He looked better than Wilson Contreras at the plate. Ian Happ hit a first pitch home run, and I don't think he has a hit since, in maybe eight or nine strikeouts. That's not a knock on any of those guys. I believe this team is going to score a lot of runs and be a fearsome offense. But if Hayward, he gets criticized a lot for his swing. Go look at his best seasons, how that swing looked. It wasn't pretty. I talked to dozens of scouts who tear apart his best swing. It's not a good scout looking swing. You don't want to teach that swing to any kids. But sometimes it works. He's athletic enough, and when the timing is right, it can work, and he can get hot. So I don't know if he just needs to be in a better headspace, get his confidence back. But a good start can mean good things for Jason Hayward. that, again, it's four games. I'm not willing to say that he's back by any means. He looked a lot better. I saw some hard hit balls. I saw some balls fall. And that's the biggest thing, I think, for confidence, the balls falling. But you're right. If he struggles, if he's the Jason Hayward on offense that we saw the past 2 years, I think he gets a longer leash because of who he is, the type of work he puts in, how good he is at everything else that he does, and the type of leader that he is off the field. I think he'll get a longer leash than most other players would. But, yeah, by June, if he's hitting 200 and not walking and not providing much on offense, then sure. Yeah, I think you have other options. And really high quality options, you're going to have to sit him at some point.
Just another moment here with Sahadev Sharma. He is with The Athletic. Boy, if you're not reading The Athletic, you're missing out on a lot of stories. You can go online and find The Athletic. It gives John Greenberg something to do every morning. So tonight we have the Cubs debut of Tyler Chatwood wearing Sammy Sosa's jersey number. I know the dude had a rocky time when he was at home with the Rockies, but he was pretty good on the road. So what can Cub fans expect from Tyler Chatwood?
Yeah, the two things you want to look for if it's working are his curveball and his changeup. He's got the curveball, he struggled to use it in Colorado. It just didn't move the way he wanted it to move when he was at Coors Field. I think that kind of threw him off more than anything, and it lingered into other starts as well, because you have to throw it differently to make it go one way in Coors Field, and then you go on the road and you have to change your arm angle, your arm slot, and all of a sudden you're throwing a pitch differently and it's working differently. There's no consistency. You don't know what to expect, and it messes with your head. I think this is a guy that has some pretty nasty stuff, and he hasn't gotten the results that he's wanted during his time in Colorado. So I'm really curious to see how the Cubs, who will prepare as well as any team, have a great pitching infrastructure with Tommy Hotovy and Mike Borzello and new pitching coach Jim Hickey. I think these guys are going to have him well prepared and ready to face this team. I'm really curious to see how it works. A curveball, a fastball that can sit in the mid-90s. We talk a lot about spin rates today in baseball, and he's got elite spin rates with his four-seam fastball and with his curveball. And these are the type of guys that, these forward-thinking front offices can get a lot out of. Coaching staffs in front offices like the Cubs can get a lot out of. Think Charlie Morton with the Houston Astros. That's a good scenario here. A guy that kind of came out of nowhere last year and blew some people away in the playoffs, too. So I think that's what you want, a best-case scenario type of thing with Tyler Chatwood. Maybe a few more innings than what Charlie Morton was eating last year, but I think that's the upside with Tyler Chatwood. You just want to see some command, and you want to see some missing bats.
I like the Charlie Morton comparison. I'll take that. And a good thing the Astros got Gerrit Cole. They really needed help with their starting rotation.
Right?
That seems
all of a
fair.
Sudden, the guy's matching career highs and strikeouts. So there's something that they figured something out in that department, too. That's a guy with all the talent in the world, and Gerrit Cole. And a Pirates team that gets a lot of credit for working with pitchers just couldn't maximize that talent. And now look at Gerrit Cole looking like his best self in his first start with the Astros. That was impressive.
Hey, I had a buddy who got married in Cincinnati about 12 years ago for some reason, and we got to go to the Great American Ballpark. And, this is where the home opener went. The baseball used to always start the opening day in Cincinnati, and the oldest franchise, and, Marge Schott, the oldest owner. I used to think Marge Schott was such a hypocrite because her players couldn't have facial hair, yet she could. But I wasn't impressed by the Great American Ballpark, other than the that mosaic inside of the great Reds teams of the 70s. The park just kind of left me wanting. What are your thoughts on that park?
Yeah, no, I actually really agree with you there. What I like are the statues and all the history of. I love seeing great teams represented. So seeing all those statues, Joe Morgan, Johnny Bench, that's fun. I like seeing that and honoring those types of players. But the ballpark leaves me a little underwhelmed. I'd probably rank it last in the division. I'm not a big fan of Miller Park either, but. There's just something missing. PNC just brings so much. You have the city behind it, nice, the bridges. Everything just looks, you kind of focus on everything great about the city. Wrigley Field, we all love that ballpark for so many reasons, and they're making it even better, updating it without taking away the charm. that it's not as good as for a newer ballpark. You wish they would have done a better job, but hey, not everything is perfect. And I know we I don't like the new ballpark in Atlanta that was just built, so it's hit or miss, I guess. And then we all have our different tastes, but yeah, I don't think it's people are too big fans of this ballpark.
All right. Well, Sahad, if we really enjoy your company, thank you very much for giving us some time today, and have a wonderful broadcast. Hopefully the infield won't be brought in with one out again, but we won't get into that. It's really early to be, criticizing the best manager in all of baseball. But thank you for coming on, and we'll be checking you out in The Athletic.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, Harry.
Oh, my pleasure. And it is Harry in for Adam Hoag. Adam will be doing postgame tonight for the Sox and the Blue Jays. The White Sox are north of the border in Toronto tonight, tomorrow, and Wednesday. They have 6:07 starts. Andy Mazur's got your pregame, and then your postgame, it's going to be an Adam Hoag, or it's going to be a Mark Carman, who's at the Carm. The guy really would like you to follow him on Twitter, at the Carm. And then Thursday is the home opener, the White Sox and the Detroit Tigers, 3 o'clock start, and the whole station's going to be out there on Thursday. So you guys got to come out starting 10 a.m. Cork and Kerry. They'll be, popping the first Cold Goose Island. So be a part of it all, won't you? Hey, Kevin Powell, star of the Rokan Show. Kevin Powell was in San Antonio for the Final Four. He will be with us when we return in just moments on Sports Central, on the stream, baby, WGNRadio.com. This would be the coolest rock and roll song that mentions the great city of San Antonio, Texas. So we thank the Doobie Brothers for delivering it for us all those years ago. I wonder if they knew when they wrote it that we would be using it on the stream. To bring in Kevin Powell, who was in San Antonio this weekend to see the run of the Rambler come to a ceasing halt. Kevin Powell is with us. KP, what up, dog?
I am great. I was sitting out in the lobby waiting to come on with you, and I was reading through David Haw's column about his covering of Loyola and his sentiments mm-hmm. towards the mm-hmm. team. And he said, look, reporters, they try to find angles, a million different angles. Sometimes you're writing as strictly as a reporter. Sometimes you're giving your perspective, your opinion, your thoughts. It's a kind of a different angle each time. And he basically says in his column that he genuinely felt upset for this team. And I couldn't agree more. We were standing outside. First of all, I was courtside as these guys were walking off, the Ramblers, following their loss to Michigan, and it's Ben Richardson and Clayton Custer. Richardson is tearing up, and Custer has his arm around him, yeah. And those two are walking off down into the tunnel after playing.
They're teammates forever.
Forever. And I just felt awful for him. And I was we were all, crowded. The media's crowded around their locker room waiting for us to get in there and talk to the guys. And look, I haven't been doing this nearly as long as David Haw. I've only been doing reporting for a handful of years now, and you do separate.
I can't tell.
And I look like I'm 12 for anybody who doesn't know what I look like. You separate emotion from your responsibilities as a reporter. But I was generally, I had like goosebumps and nerves waiting for it all. The whole journey, because you're reflecting as you're waiting. We're standing there for 20 minutes or so, and you're looking back on it all. And I'm like, That was awesome. What a great ride. And it did sting a little bit, though, knowing that they could be playing tonight with a double-digit lead late in that game.
You know, I, as a fan, I was at the, I've gone to a couple, for work, but as a fan, I went to the Final Four that Joakim Noah and Florida won in Indianapolis.
Okay.
When George Mason was an 11 seed who qualified. And in that first game that George Mason played, they got blown off the court.
Yeah.
I mean, they were never in it.
Right.
Loyola played their game. Mm-hmm. Loyola had a 7-point lead at the half.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had 12 point lead 12 with about 10
lead,
minutes
right?
ago or so.
And then they had that one, one injury, and then they had that one stretch of about 5.5 minutes where they threw the ball away on 5 straight possessions. But, I thought that they really represented themselves. And I'm not a big fan of the moral victory, but what a statement for a team that was picked, not even to win Missouri Valley, to win the Valley, and then, to go through 4 other teams to get to the Final Four. I thought they played proud.
They were such an enjoyable team to be around, and talking to the guys after the game, I was joking with another reporter that they're a better quote than most of the pro athletes in town. I'm not trying to be cynical or knocking any of the athletes. There's plenty of great athletes in town that are really interesting to talk to, but all of them were well-spoken. They had interesting things to say. I think they all had great self-awareness. They had great perspective on the entire run. They were just a really enjoyable bunch to be around. The entire university, from their media relations department to Porter Moser to the players, it was a wild ride. But it was the turnovers that did them in, and leading up to the game, that's what we kept at. Okay, what's the matchup? What do you guys have to do to win? All those sorts of questions. And Clayton Custer just, you know, multiple times, so we have to win that turnover battle. We've been careless with the ball. They were 131st in the nation in turnovers, as we've talked about, Harry, on Friday leading up to the game. And they lost the turnover battle. They were winning it at halftime, and then they lost overall 17-12. And it was uncharacteristic. This whole tournament and their whole season, they never really shot themselves in the foot, but there was that five-minute stretch in the second half where they were just throwing the ball away, and they lost rhythm and tempo to the game, and they normally control pace of play. And even if things do speed up, they found a way to slow the game down. But that 5-minute stretch, and then to Michigan's credit, they finally started hitting shots. Mo Wagner came in, Duncan Robinson came in off the bench. That's a deep team.
Yeah, Duncan Robinson, who won the sixth man of the year award in the Big Ten, he started his career at Williams. That's like a D3 school.
Wow,
there's a D3 school in Massachusetts. Usually, if you go to Williams, like, you come out of there and you're like a top flight attorney,
right?
You know, right. But
I think they're 29-0 now when he scores at least 6 points. 29-0.
Look at you. Yeah. Are you betting the Wolverines tonight? I mean, just for fun.
Yeah, for fun. You know, I wouldn't be completely surprised if they do win just because of how good their defense is. It's absolutely elite. I think everyone's expecting Villanova to win considering the amount of talent they have. They have a potential lottery guy, Mikael. What is it? What am I blanking on his name right now? I was all prepared. Mikael Bridges, the guard for Villanova. Going to probably be a top 10 pick in the NBA draft. Jalen Brunson's the consensus national player of the year. But Michigan does kind of have that. Mo Wagner, man, he's a guy who just seems like everywhere you look on the court, he's there.
Yeah,
he does a little bit of everything.
And if you say anything bad about him, he'll kick your glasses in.
I saw it. Yeah, didn't Jim Nantz embarrass himself a little bit? He called a meme. Did you hear that on the broadcast? I was talking to Steve Cochran this morning, and he brought that up. And I saw some people tweeting about it, that Rafferty, and because I saw the slow-mo stuff of Grant Hill and Rafferty when
ducking, when Wagner goes leaping
over
the... Yeah.
And Jim Nantz said, that's going to turn into a meme. And,
oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, that's tough look for Jim Nantz there. But
I like what they did with CBS owns TNT, TBS, True throughout the tournament. They're showing the games on all those stations. So Saturday night, we watched. I was at my friend Spike's house.
Yeah.
And for Seder, and I want to hear all about your Seder dinner later. but we watched the Loyola feed. It was so cool. You know, you could have watched the regular broadcast.
Oh, right. They do
you
that
could
now,
have watched
right?
the Michigan broadcast, or you could have watched the Loyola broadcast.
So who was on the Loyola broadcast?
We're cheering for your captain of the 1963 Loyola Ramblers broadcast. Your star, Mr. H?
Just, I don't need to be, who, give me the name.
Do you know the one guy that was on the team that
yes.
was there, Harkness?
Gotcha. That's right.
So he was there, and we were watching that, and so it was like when you were excited, they were excited. When you were disappointed, they were disappointed. I like the way they did that. Did you stay? So I imagine you went and covered Loyola immediately afterwards in their locker room. Did you come back out and watch KU and Nova?
Well, by the time we had finished post-game interviews in the locker room and then Porter Moser spoke at the podium, by the time that all kind of wrapped up, I hadn't seen much of the game, really any of it. I just heard cheering. And then I looked at the score, and I'm like, okay, this game's over. It was like 22-5 at some point in the first half, so I caught a little bit of it. The game was clearly over. I had to finish up some work. Had a 6 a.m. flight. There was really no reason to stay. So I stayed for like, with a little bit, I don't know, 15 minutes left, 10 minutes left in the second half, I got out of there. I wanted to beat the mad rush.
They
my hotel, though, Harry, was like a Kansas Jayhawks headquarters.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. But then at the end of the night, I'm like, okay, I'm going to go get something to eat. And when I hear the fans start filing into the hotel, that's time to go to bed. And I saw a lot of, they were just so like devastated and upset.
Wow.
But I don't think they were too like pissed off because it had they. I think every, they were just deflated because they realized at halftime the game was pretty much over at that point.
Well, because Bill Self didn't do anything on defense. Bill Self sat there and let them break the record. They hit 18 three-pointers in the history of the Final Four. That's the most ever. In the history of the college basketball tournament, only once has a team in the tournament scored more, and that was Loyola Marymount, who scored 21 in a game. I just don't understand how if you're giving up all those three-pointers, you don't adjust your defense in some way, in some form.
Yeah, I saw the outcry on Twitter that, look, if a team's beating you in one dimension of the game, you got to stop that, right? I mean, if a big man is beating you down low all game, you take it away from him. I don't know how you allow that to happen, particularly a team like Kansas who's played well and a coach for Bill Self. If a team gets hot, a team gets hot, but to allow, 18 threes, which is a record.
18 threes.
Which is a record for the Final Four. That obviously can't happen.
No, it can't happen. So Michigan, I thought, KP, that Michigan could not have played worse in the first half.
Oh, my God. The first half, I mean, I was so underwhelmed by what I saw from Michigan. And if it wasn't for Mo Wagner, he wasn't necessarily making buckets in the first half
game. He kept them in the game.
Offensive boards, kind of being active, being that annoying defensive gnat on that side of the floor was crucial for Michigan. He was the only reason that first half didn't even get out of hand for Michigan. And then he started making shots.
Michigan makes a lot of threes. They didn't make any threes in the first half. They never turned the ball over. You talked about how Loyola was 131st in the country in
12 turnovers per game, and then they end up with 17 in the entire game.
And Michigan is the second best team at not turning the ball over, and they were turning it over all the time in the first half.
Yep.
Plus, they were picking up dumb fouls, which John Beilein teams really don't do. They don't pick up dumb fouls. I thought that Loyola should have been up about 18 points when that game got to the second half. It was great. They were up 7.
Right.
Great that they held Michigan to 22 first half points, but man, they should have just been up so much more. Okay, so where is Loyola now? We're losing a couple guys, key players.
No Dante Ingram.
Right.
No more Ben Richardson. So those are the two key players, but you do have Clayton Custer back for one more year.
The center is only going to be a sophomore.
Cam Crutwig's going to be back next year. So you have a majority of the roster coming back. Clayton Custer said straight up, he's like, the expectations are higher now, no question about it. If you make the Final Four, I think that's a reasonable thing to throw out there. I don't know if they have Final Four, but who are we now to project and be like, Loyola can't make the Final Four next year after they just did it this year? But
will there be a buzz to like Loyola's gym when they come out for their first game?
I think so.
They come out for their first NBC game?
Absolutely. I think this morning I'm driving in and the car in front of me had a Loyola Ramblers bumper sticker. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that guy didn't have that before this run. I'm not knocking the bandwagon-esque nature of doing that, throwing a Loyola bumper sticker on your car after a Final Four run. My point is that there's some excitement. I mean, if somebody's going to throw a Loyola bumper sticker on their it looked to be a fairly new and expensive Lexus, Harry.
Ooh.
So if they're going to go all the way with a bumper sticker, that means something, you know?
It was Rose car?
one of his cars, I think.
He's got a bunch. Does he own a Rambler?
I don't think that
would be like fitting.
That would be fitting.
All right, Kevin Powell is here. We're going to step away.
Yes. I do like I think it's cool. There are some Chicago ties tonight. Charles Matthews, Rita grad. Jalen Brunson, the Stevenson grad.
Right, going head to head.
Brunson was Mr. Illinois basketball.
And right, 2015.
And Matthews was the runner-up. And we asked him about that, and he's like, he wanted, he knows. They're keeping tabs on each other. So I think that's going to be cool. And they're not necessarily going to be matched up together because they're different sort of players, but there's a cool Chicago tie in there.
Yeah, I remember when I was a young man, all the Chicago kids used to play at Illinois.
Right?
It doesn't happen anymore. It doesn't happen anymore. Okay, we'll come back with buried headlines, and then Kevin and I will make our selections on the point spread. On the game tonight. It's WGNRadio.com. This is Sports Central. Adam Hoag has the day off. He'll be with you later today, though. The White Sox play here on WGN Radio. The White Sox north of the border, their only trip to Canada this year to the playoffs. And that's the Sox and the Jays. Reynaldo Lopez will get the start tonight for the White Sox, who were snowed out yesterday. 6:07 starts tonight, tomorrow, and Wednesday. And then Thursday, there's a few tickets left for the home opener around 3 o'clock.
You going to be there, Harry?
Against the Detroit Tigers. Oh, if you can get the Bridgeport police to drop the charges, I will be there. I will look forward to that. Make some calls.
My sister married a Southside cop last year, Harry. So I've got, you know, I've started to get acclimated with the only Southside I knew growing up a White Sox fan was 35th and Shields. But now I'm getting exposed to the beauty of Beverly and Mount Greenwood and all the great things the Southside has to offer.
There's a lot of good stuff there on the South side of Chicago. So these are buried headlines. He's Kevin Powell. I'm Harry Tynowitz. And these are buried headlines. These are stuff that weren't necessarily on the front page, but you might see them somewhere else. Dateline, Rhode Island. A Rhode Island nudist camp is looking for a lifeguard. You must be certified as a lifeguard. And the other catch is you have to be naked.
I'm looking for a side gig this summer, Harry. You know, a few bucks, some beer money or something.
There you go. Do you have any problem, you know? I used to think like the biggest challenge as a lifeguard was how to keep all that white stuff on your nose all day.
SPF 50 action.
Mm-hmm. But now, in the buff, will you lifeguard in the buff?
You know what my concern about, I don't even know if I should say this on the air, about like nudist anything, colony or beach or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like it's supposed to be just casual, like, oh, we're just living our lives in the nude. But like, what if you're like, wow, she's really attractive. And then you're walking around.
Right.
Like, that would be awkward.
Like, and you all of a sudden you've got a surfboard.
Because to them, it's just a casual thing. Like, oh, this is not, it's not like a sexual thing.
Right, we're being free.
It's just, we're being free spirits. But then all of a sudden, like, oh, look at Jim over here. He's ruining it for everybody.
Way to go,
hey, Jim. We're just trying to have a good time. This isn't some sex party. Put it away.
Well, unless somebody asked, like, you know, hey, do you know where I could get a burger? You know, and then Jim would just, like, turn, you know, 45 degrees. Oh, that way. Okay. Thanks, Jim. I got that.
That's a good point.
Uh-huh.
But have you ever thought about that? Like a nudist, like...
Have you ever thought about it? What do you think I did? How do you think I got through high school?
But that's my point. But at high school, you're thinking about it as like a sexual type thing.
Right.
But like if you went and your buddy... Like what if you got convinced to go do one of this and you're like, okay, all right, cool. I guess I'm going to do it, whatever. And next thing, like 2 minutes into it, and you're like, look at Harry. Come on, Harry.
How could you...
Be mature for a minute.
How could you not?
Yeah.
I mean, how could you? I mean, I don't mean to be like, you know, shallow, but how could you be there on the beach in a news camp, news colony, and not be somewhat aroused? All right. There's a horse that's going to run in the Kentucky Derby. The way that they do the Derby preps this year, you know, like the last 6-7 years, is you accumulate points through other big races. Like this weekend was the Florida Derby.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like NASCAR.
It's kind of like NASCAR, only it's fun. So the horse that won the big race in England, tell me if you can guess who you think this horse is named for. He will be in the Kentucky Derby because he won this big race in England. The horse's name is Gronkowski.
Okay.
Now we're back to being naked at a nudist camp.
There we go. Full circle. Mm-hmm. I'm putting all my dough on Gronkowski.
Well, if it's full circle.
Will there be a Gronk spike from the horse?
You know it. Yeah. You know it. You
some
know
sort
it.
Of dance, rave party, he'll bust out.
It's going to spike the jockey.
Right.
He's going to get to the finish line. He's going to spike the jockey. Poor little jockey's going to be bouncing down off his head.
I like it. I'm Team Gronkowski. When is the Derby? Kentucky Derby.
It's always... What country did you grow up in?
It's
the first Saturday in May.
Gotcha.
But only for like, you know, 130 years, so I can understand why you wouldn't know that.
I mix up the date of Christmas and things like that as well.
Well, Christmas is always on... You don't know Christmas is December 25th?
I mix it up all the time. Is it the 26th, the 27th,
what do you mix it? What do you mix it up with? Purim?
With what?
Purim?
Yes, exactly. Halloween always mixes me up. Is it December 31st?
Do you always get the 4th of July?
I miss that one every year, Harry. I'm always celebrating on like the 8th.
It seems so strange to me. Yeah. Did you see that Gabe Kapler, new manager of the Phillies?
Yeah, he's off to a great start.
A Jew. He singled for his relief pitcher to come in from the bullpen. Only problem was he did not have a relief pitcher warming up in the bullpen.
He also had Aaron Nola bat and then took him out.
So and the Braves manager got thrown out because legally you only get 8 pitches coming in from the bullpen, and the umpire said this guy is going to get hurt if he doesn't get more than 8 pitches. And the Braves manager yelled and said, "That's BS. It's a rule."
I see both sides. If the umpire is covering for your ass because he's worried your starting pitcher is going to get injured because you didn't, or your relief pitcher didn't have proper amount of time to prepare, that's not a good look for Gabe Kapler.
No, it's not a good look. And I'm just glad that there's a Jewish guy who's managing a baseball team. You know, because like they're going to say, who should we pinch hit? Who should bat now? He'd say, well, we could pinch hit him. It won't hurt. We could bring that guy in. It wouldn't hurt. You know, and that's probably Capo really knew the guy wasn't warming up in the bullpen. He's like, no, rest. Don't wear yourself out. Take it easy. We got to get out of here. Did you see Jesus Christ Superstar, by the way, last night?
I saw the end of it, and I was like, damn, I kind of wish I watched the whole thing.
I thought it was pretty good. 9.4 million people, see, a 1.7 rating.
It's all the live stuff now. You're going to see more and more of that stuff on
I would hope so.
Network. Live.
I would want to see a lot more of the... you know, musicals. I love musicals.
Do you? I don't.
Oh, you should, dude.
Like, when they're done well, but I don't know. I guess I have a bad stigma because it was always, I don't know, when you're young, I was bored. It just didn't work for me.
Chicago's got awesome theater.
I know.
Musicals are great.
Theater. I'm not knocking it, but I'll try to get more
into it.
You and I will go on a date, Harry, and we'll go see a play together.
We could do that.
Okay.
Ben, you have a favorite theater, favorite place to go?
I'm favorable to Chicago Theater. My sister was part of Joseph when it was running there. So
really?
Yeah, she was in the children's choir once upon a time ago.
Can you name all the colors in the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat?
Heck no.
It'd be easier to name Dennis Rodman's tattoos than to name all the colors in that coat.
I'll agree with you there.
Yeah, but Steppenwolf is awesome.
I saw Book of Mormon.
That's dirty. That's funny as hell.
Yeah, that was a solid one.
Northlight Theater's great. Remy Bumpo. Go support a Chicago play.
I love
play.
The theaters, no question.
Adam Hogue will probably be here tomorrow, 1 o'clock. And if not, Kevin Powell will be here. Anybody, but if they call me, then I'll be here. Otherwise, you guys have a wonderful day. Remember, White Sox play here. The only undefeated team in the American League. 5:30 is your pregame.
Andy Mazur, 5:35. Farmio and DJ at 6:07.
And Kevin Powell will be in the clubhouse all year.
That's right.
Players may not notice him because he'll be hiding, but he'll be in the clubhouse all year.
I don't know what that means. Am I hiding in Matt Davidson's locker and then I'll pop out and scare him?
I would hide in Matt Davidson's locker. That dude is so cool.
How many homers tonight?
Tonight, I think... he had a hit to right field the other day that was huge.
Rocket.
In that rally. Right. He's going to hit 42 for the year.
Couple ding-dongs tonight, Harry?
I think tonight he's just going to get... let's not get carried away. I think he gets three hits tonight, but no homers. Okay. All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Ben Anderson. Ben, here's to Ben. Great job by Ben producing the show. Enjoy your national title game today. I'm taking Michigan and the point and a half, KP.
Nova.
Oh, I'd love some on a bagel with cream cheese. Thanks for listening to Sports Central.